Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Full Sail Podcast. Thank you for setting sail with us. I am your host, Brandon Tomioi. I am, as always, joined by my co-host, David Deep. And for today's episode, our very first Full Sail Podcast guest, Craig Freeman of Clipper Central. How you guys doing?
Good.
Doing good.
Excited about the upcoming NBA season?
Definitely.
I can't wait. After the first game, I mean, the result could have been better, but I liked a couple things that I saw.
Yeah, I mean, we had that first game against Golden State, and we finally got to see our first look at the players of the upcoming season. And I think far and away, the one thing that everyone's really been talking about is Blake Griffin and his improved jump shot. I think he started off that first quarter on fire, 14 points, 6 of 8 shooting, and that included a corner three. Yeah, Dave, run us through that new jump shot.
Mike Prada of SBN had a really good piece on it, and the mechanics are different. I mean, last year he had his stance was a little bit wider, and it was more mechanical when he was shooting it, and it was more of a set shot, so it took time for him to release it. This year, you can see that he does a hop into his jump shot, and the release is quicker. You know, it's a little bit like JJ Redick's. Although JJ Redick is really quick, but just that little tweak gives him so much more of a shot. Like when defenders close out on him, he's a little bit faster, and that's all you need. Because each time Bogut was on him, Bogut would close out on him, but it wasn't in time because he would get the shot off so quickly. That was amazing to see. I mean, I didn't expect that at all. I mean, I thought he was going to improve, but I didn't think he would improve his mechanics that much to the point where, I mean, he's pretty much like Karl Malone now. I mean, if he keeps this up, the sky's the limit for him.
And a lot of that is from him just being such a tireless worker. I was actually listening to the radio, the Beast 980, and I heard Ralph Uller talking about it. He was talking to Blake's shooting coach, Bob Tate, and one of the things that he mentioned is that even sometimes when he's going out with the guys, the other players on the team, they'll have dinner. Right after that, he'll just go right back to Playa Vista into the training facility, and he'll call up his coach and say, like, let's shoot, and he'll put up another 200 shots before he's done for the night. So, I mean, he just has been working on that shot nonstop. You can definitely tell that the work has paid off. And thank goodness, because that was the one thing that he was probably the most criticized about in terms of the weapon that he needed to add. But now that he has it, I'm actually really interested in how the defenses react to this. Is, you know, like, did they try and take away his shooting as an option? I mean, they definitely don't want him driving, because that's even more dangerous. You know, and also forcing the rotations and opening up his passing ability.
I think smart defensive teams with good defenders, like we saw Golden State with Bogut, and then if Ibaka or Noah were guarding him, they're going to give him the two. They'll put their hand up, but allowing Blake to have a wide open long two is a lot better than letting him drive past you. He's still going to hit a couple of shots, but in the long run, they're a lot better off letting him shoot the long twos. You know, I think his ball handling is really what makes this more dangerous. You got a guy like Ibaka who can shoot as well as Griffin from 2 and even 3-point range now, and he's as athletic as Griffin, arguably, but he doesn't have the ball handling skills to really damage a team. So when a guy closes out on Ibaka, he can't really get past him. He can't do anything with him after that. Whereas Blake's so dangerous because he's able to attack the defense after they shift.
On top of that, you know, giving DJ the space. I mean, how do you think that having Blake play, you know, further out and allowing all that space to DJ? How do you think that affects their game?
I don't think DeAndre Jordan's going to invent a post game anytime soon. That's sailed off. When Griffin stands in the corner, we saw on the three he hit in the first quarter. When Griffin stands in the corner and they run a pick and roll on the top, he's going to be wide. Griffin's either going to be wide open or DJ's going to be able to get the easy dunk because no one's helping off a good 3-point shooter in the corner.
I think it's definitely refreshing to see how that weapon that a lot of pundits have said that Griffin needs to really lock down has become, you know, that weapon that we all hoped it to be. I mean, for the Clippers to have a huge season, it does rely a lot on Blake's development and Blake's growth as well. And on top of that, I feel like how CP3 is looked at the end of the day, it really does rely a lot on how far Blake can take him as well. If we're making those Karl Malone comparisons, a lot of Stockton being so great is because he had Malone by his side. And, I mean, speaking of that, I mean, what did you guys think of the rest of the starters that we saw, you know, starting with CP3? I thought he made some nice passes as always, and, you know, 5-for-10 shooting.
Chris, I mean, you know, he has certain games where, you know, he's looking to distribute, just get everybody involved. I thought DJ looked fine. Barnes, you know, Barnes is like the de facto starter, but I think his job will be gone by the end of the season. And JJ, you know, he didn't shoot well, but, you know, it was just the first game. So I think as the preseason continues, they'll get better.
I did like DJ a lot. I thought his defense looked really good in spurts. And, Craig, you mentioned some of it on Twitter, too, about how refined DJ looks.
Yeah, he's moving his feet better than last season even. And he's just, even last season, he was jumping at more things. Whereas this year, he really looks like he's staying on the ground, following guys in and just disrupting shots rather than trying to block everything.
And Redick?
Oh, I love Redick. Man crush. But when he's healthy, I think he's the perfect third option for the Clips on offense. As a shooter, as a secondary ball handler, perfect.
He's basically an underrated Klay Thompson, and Klay Thompson's an overrated JJ Redick.
Exactly. Third best option on a playoff team, not a
there
star.
You go.
yeah,
but he's going to get paid like one, though.
Yep.
But one thing, though, Dave, you thought that there's a chance that Matt Barnes could lose his job. You mentioned it on a previous podcast episode as well, where you really thought that CDR could become the starter for this team.
Yeah, I think it's a real possibility. If you look at that small forward position, it's definitely the weakest of the five for the Clippers. So basically, Doc Rivers said that he will test all of his small forwards and give them a shot in the preseason to see who can prove that they can earn that spot. So during the first games, Barnes started the first half, and then CDR started the second half. And as soon as CDR came in, you can see that the shift in energy. I mean, CDR just, when he's on the floor, I mean, he has more energy. He spreads the floor pretty well. He was getting his teammates involved. He had a nice lob to Blake. Even though he only scored 2 points and he was 0-for-2, you can see, like, the way that he plays, it's tailor-made for that first unit. I mean, he can run with everybody, especially since last year he improved his three-point shot a lot. That can become a greater weapon for him this year. And I think by season's end, we might see him in the starting lineup.
Craig, you like CDR a lot too, and you had mentioned that maybe you thought that he could start as well. Going back to what you said, Dave, you said that small forward, it might be one of the weakest spots that the Clippers have. That's not to say that all four small forwards that they have are necessarily bad, but they're maybe so even across the board that each of them really have a legitimate shot at becoming the starter.
Yeah, no doubt. All four of them, Ingles, Bullock, Barnes, and CDR, could probably all play a part on any team in the league, but they're probably all not quite good enough to be short-time starters, which makes it a tough choice, but I'd go with CDR. At this time in his career, he's a better offensive player, probably a better defender, and he brings a lot more energy than Barnes.
Doc mentioned some of this as well. He just said, you know, he knows where to be on the court. He's always in the right place, and to have that kind of energy hustle guy, you could almost say that this was the Matt Barnes of young, in a way.
Yep.
Right. Younger, slightly more talented Matt Barnes.
Fingers crossed with a better three-point shot.
Right.
Not as aggressive as Barnes, though. He's not going to punch anyone.
Definitely not.
Although I do like his shorts. I put it out on Twitter. What do you think of CDR shorts? We dig it, and some guy sends back, "Are you blind?"
Okay, but moving on. You know, so we've got a good look at the starters, but how about the bench? It seemed like we saw a whole bunch of bench combinations, yet it was hard to tell just from one game how all the pieces fit together. And one of the things, Craig, you'd mentioned that you know a lot about Joe Ingles, and he only came off the bench and he played, seemed like just a couple of minutes. And during that entire time, he never really touched the ball.
Yeah. I said it when they first brought him in. I said, there's no use bringing in Ingles if you're not going to allow him to handle the ball and be a playmaker. You might as well play Bullock if all you want is a guy who's going to run the floor and shoot threes. The best advantage you're getting from Ingles is he's going to be able to handle the ball. He's a really good point forward. I've compared him to Tayshaun Prince. Tayshaun Prince with a little bit of Manu, as in he's pretty creative. He's not as good. I'm not saying he's as good as those guys.
But, you know, if he just has little pieces there, yeah, here and there.
And if he's... I'd play him with the bench because I think Crawford, I have this massive problem with Crawford whenever he's the primary ball handler. He just shoots a lot of bad shots. And Jordan Farmer's a great spot-up shooter. I'd play a lot more of Ingles and allow them two to play off the ball a bit.
Yeah, and having Ingles and Farmer on the floor at the same time, it allows for two guys that can really handle the ball.
Yep.
And so if you have that type of scenario and you have Crawford in there, Crawford can really play off ball a lot.
I mean, Crawford is great playing off ball. If Crawford's attacking a weak defense on the weak side, he catches the ball and goes straight away. No one's stopping him.
The handle, the great first step, the only thing I think I would really criticize is when he, you know, when he does have the ball, he does over dribble. So, you know, having him play off ball, yeah, I agree. Yep. That's probably best case scenario.
Craig, correct me if I'm wrong, but the only thing I know from Joe Ingles is his highlight mixes on YouTube. So yeah. from what I've seen, it seems like he can get a little trigger happy when he runs down the floor and he'll just like chuck a three. So that is kind of like Crawford. Is that the type of player he is?
Not as bad as Crawford. Like, I've seen him, he pulls up for threes on the break, but only when he's open.
Yeah.
Like if you say if Klay Thompson brought the ball up the floor, if he had enough space, he'd put it up. That's what I wouldn't say. Right. He's like Crawford. He's not going to pull up in someone's face.
Yeah, we talked about Crawford. We talked about Ingles here, and in that whole combination, having Ingles and Farmar split the ball handling duties with Crawford playing off ball.
I think Farmar is a lot better than Darren Collison. Just personal opinion, especially on this team. He's a much better he's a much better playmaker. He's a better spot-up shooter. Collison's better at getting into the paint. Farmer's actually more athletic than Collison. Farmer had the highest vertical leap of his whole draft class. Farmer's vertical leap is 5 inches bigger than Russell Westbrook's.
What?
Yep.
Yeah, but that was when he was a rookie. I mean, come on.
He's only 26.
Right now I doubt he can jump higher than Westbrook.
Probably, but I'm still saying no one thinks he's an athlete.
You're saying he could kind of sneak up on people because they don't expect that athleticism from him.
Well, you look at the 6'2 white guy running the ball up the floor, and you're not going to think he's going to dunk.
And speaking of white guys, let's get into Spencer Hawes.
Oh, I thought you were going to go back to J.J. Redick. He didn't hit a three, but I think you can see how useful a big who can shoot the three is. Just spreading the floor, takes out Andrew Bogut, who's a really good defender, takes him out to the three-point line and opens up the lane a lot.
Yeah, and I think there's something that could be kind of amazing if they take Hawes and Redick together and they kind of put him in a floppy set and they use Hawes as the big.
Yes, that play is what I dream about.
Hawes is such an incredible passer, man.
Yeah.
He's amazing, especially his bounce passes are so crisp.
Reminds me of Marc Gasol. He's the only other big who can throw those bounce passes.
Yeah. Yeah, and then when he's in the high post and he does those bounce passes to the cutter, it's beautiful.
I remember watching Atlanta last year and with Korver, who's pretty similar to Redick, and they had Millsap, who ended up being a really good three-point shooter. They used to run floppy plays, but then they'd mix it up, and sometimes Korver would turn around and then re-screen for the big. I could see them using that. Hawes stepping out of a Redick screen to shoot the three instead.
Right.
That might give opposing defenses some second thoughts about, you know, how they play their defense, if not some nightmares. Yeah, but speaking of defense, Hawes, he's not known for his defense. I think we've talked about it before, and I think it's fairly general knowledge that, you know, he's no defensive savant. But the one thing about it is that if you look at the big man defense, it seemed really porous from having Hawes on the floor at the same time as Big Baby.
Definitely. I think you can't have a lineup this year without either Udo or Jordan on the floor. You have to have a rim protector, especially if you're on the bench. If you've got Jordan Farmer and Jamal Crawford trying to stop guards, that's just not happening. You've got to have a rim protector.
Definitely. It's not going to work with a Baby and Hawes, man. I just see a lot of problems happening if they have to play a lot of minutes together. Udo is a much better option.
Even on offense, I don't think Baby Davis is that far ahead of Udo that you'd have to play him over Udo's defense.
It's the first preseason game. Of course, there's going to be some sloppiness as a result of that. But on top of that, do you guys think that, if we see a lot more of what we saw in that first game, are we going to worry ourselves about that small sample size? Not saying we should, because, of course, it's a small sample size. And they were mixing up a lot of players that really hadn't seen the floor together defensively. So communication-wise, it's not all there, and that comes with time. But should the bench defense be a concern once the regular season starts? That was definitely a concern last season because you would see the starters come in, establish a lead, and then the bench comes in, and there goes that lead.
I wouldn't mind if they played DeAndre Jordan with the bench a bit. So took subbed Jordan out first and brought in either Hawes or Udo and then played Jordan with the bench just for patches.
That might work. I think if you're going to play Baby and Hawes, there's going to be some issues, but I don't think that will happen. I think Doc is experimenting right now. It's only the first game. He's seeing what combinations work. He's playing all the players. Who knows? Maybe Wilcox, can be a perimeter defender. Or Bullock has improved defensively where those guys can help. So, he has some options, but I think we have to see because it's too early right now to tell.
Yeah, it is very early, and again, I don't like panicking or worrying too much about small sample sizes again because they are that small of a sample size. You can't put it. It's like putting stock into single game plus minus, for instance.
Right.
I mean, talking about defensive improvements, Doc Rivers, he actually said something really interesting about Blake.
Thinks he can be all NBA defense this year, next year, this season.
Oh, wow, he said that?
Yeah, direct quote. Yeah. I got the quote. If he does that, then the Clippers are going to have an elite defense next year because they were ninth last season with Blake pretty much average.
If he does that, he's the MVP.
Yep.
If Blake improves his offensive game as it is already, plus become an elite defender, then it's over. He's the MVP.
Oh, yeah. And the only guys who are arguably better than him are Durant and LeBron.
Exactly.
No arguments there. Of course, it will definitely take a lot more conditioning if they're going to get to that level. And one of the things about that game, though, is there was 59 fouls, so both teams were playing really sloppy. I mean, that is a lot of fouls. That is, set the DVR and make sure that anytime someone goes to the line, you're fast-forwarding through every single free throw. What can Doc do?
Well, he said, I wrote about this, he said he hasn't made them run yet. All they've been doing is defensive and offensive drills or scrimmages. So apparently he's going to make them do more line-to-line running, which is pretty boring for them, but they need to do it.
Other than the game, the other big news that we've had this week, well, I think I have a news clip of this, so let me just go ahead and play that. In 2014, the National Basketball Association announces a gargantuan new television deal with ESPN and Turner Sports to the tune of $24 billion. American dollars! Starting in the year of 2016 and for each year until the 2024-2025 season, the league will receive a whopping $2.6 billion, and the money is expected to raise the salary cap to unforeseen levels. Does this mean players will be paid their worth? Kevin Durant thinks so. So here's a toast to our NBA players. The next big contract could be you. So, yeah, let's talk about this deal. It's huge money, and one of the crazy things about it is that we're definitely looking at a salary cap increase on Deadspin. They've talked about it on Grantland. They've talked about it, and they're estimating that we could see a spike that brings the salary cap up to $88 million, $90 million, and to put that in scale, $63 million, close to $64 million is where the salary cap is for this season. So, Craig, can you run us through some scenarios that you can see with the new salary cap?
Well, first of all, I think that the NBA is not going to chuck it all together in 1 year. That'll be too uneven. They'll increase it most likely by 5 to 10 million a season until it reaches the necessary amount. This really impacts the Clippers in four ways. First of all, there's no way Chris Paul and Blake Griffin play out their full five-year deals. They both have an option to end their contract at the end of 2016, and so at the end of the 2016-17 season. With a bigger cap, they would both earn a lot more money signing brand new max contracts. Spencer Hawes also has an opt-out this time, and although he isn't a max player, he'll be able to earn more if he's playing well. How do you think DeAndre's contract will go?
I think for DeAndre, it's really going to be interesting because if he re-ups for an extended deal at the end of his contract, the Clippers are big winners, because if he signs, even say he signs for a max contract, at the end of his current contract, if we see that spike, then that contract value is going to be marginalized by how high the salary cap is going in the long run. So the Clippers actually end up looking like winners in that case. The thing that I'm wondering is that does DJ actually decide to go on a short deal or include a player option so that he can actually get some of the new money as well?
I can't see the Clippers giving him a max contract if he's only going to play two or three seasons. What I think the Clippers do is offer him a full five at the max, which ends up being a bargain deal once the new deal kicks in. What DeAndre manager will look for is 2 to 3 years. I think DeAndre will end up taking less money in the short term to make a lot more long term.
Yeah, that definitely makes the most sense. I think he likes where he is. I think having that connection that he has with the rest of the team, especially how, you know, him and Blake, they're practically BFFs.
Did you see that video a while ago where they had to guess like their own favorite movies and stuff, and they got like 10 questions in a row right?
Was that on Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they love being on that show. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they have this connection, and I don't see him being the same player even if you take him off the Clippers because of that connection with Blake. I think there's such a chemistry going on there that it actually brings his game up to another level. And I know technically if you're talking about it in a metric sense and you're looking at stats, that there's no way to really quantify that. But sometimes, you know, if you're going by the eye test, you definitely feel like they know where each other, you know, are going to be on the floor, and they play to that so, so well.
There's also the Doc Rivers thing. DeAndre Jordan's not going to find a better coach for the way he plays in the league, unless you're going to the Chicago Bulls, maybe Tibbs.
But yeah. I definitely agree with the motivation that Doc has given, and seeing DJ, I do believe that he wants to pay that back as well. Yeah. I actually wrote a little bit about this, and it was posted on Clipper Blog, so if anybody wants to look that up, you know, shameless plug for myself. The article I wrote, I think way back in around March, April time, called Pygmalion and the Power of Doc Rivers, kind of comparing Doc a little bit to Henry Higgins of Pygmalion and My Fair Lady. But beyond that, there was actually something really, really interesting. Is beyond the start of the preseason, the Clippers have really gone just full bore this season in terms of getting the fan engagement started early. And one of the first things we saw is actually on Thursday night, they had an MVP rally where they brought a lot of the season ticket holders over to Universal Studios Hollywood, where they had Ralph Lawler and Steve Ballmer actually talk a lot about how excited they are for the upcoming season. And they spoke right out to all the fans. They gave the fans a night out at the amusement park. But on top of that, you got to hear Steve Ballmer and what he was talking about in terms of how he felt the season was going to go. He talked a lot about wanting to see a lot of wins, and he probably said wins, I feel like, 10 times in 5 seconds. Yeah, I mean, just classic Steve Ballmer.
Hardcore.
That energy. Hardcore. And another thing he said is that he spoke with a good friend of his, Pete Carroll, who's the Seattle Seahawks head coach, because they both have that Seattle connection. And one of the things that was mentioned there is that it definitely takes skill and preparation, but it also takes a lot of luck. And that he's hoping that the wins come, they play to their best ability, and that luck is on their side. Most impressive thing beyond him saying that was he actually brought a lot of the Clipper history back into it. And so a lot of people there's been a lot of conversation since he took over the team with talking about rebranding the Clippers, maybe changing the name of the Clippers. But in seeing the approach that Ballmer has taken with it, it definitely feels like he wants to embrace that history and not be ashamed of it or shy away from it. And this was seen on display at this MVP rally as well, because behind him as he was talking and as Ralph was introducing everyone, he had a bunch of old Clippers players. So you saw Ken Norman, you saw Olden Polonies, you saw Gary Grant, and he just said, you know, this is the history. We've been through all these ups and downs, and now it's ready to triumph. And it was really a fantastic experience. And it harkens back to, you know, when he had the first rally, when he was celebrating being the new owner, and he had that at Staples, and how insane that was, and how exciting he was at that time as well. So he definitely he's like the fans' owner, because I think, and I can't speak for him, but judging by how his reactions are so far, he definitely feels like he wants to be the number one fan himself, and that's part of the enjoyment of him owning the team.
It reminds me a lot of Mark Cuban in that sense.
Definitely.
He's
definitely
the biggest fan. He talks to his fans more than any other owner.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pretty involved.
Oh, absolutely involved.
Yep. But I think the key that Ballmer is trying to do is he's not trying to change the whole Clippers brand. What he's trying to do is highlight all the good things about the Clippers brand while getting rid of everything that Sterling did. So he's,
yes,
all the old players are there because people look at them and they automatically think of the good times. Whereas there's been no mention of Sterling or anything like that.
There is no mention of Sterling. And the one thing that I think he kind of keys in on, and why a lot of the fans and season ticket holders and the existing and long-term Clipper fans really have enjoyed Ballmer, at least in the early going, is that he takes that history and he uses it in his way to identify with the people that have been around a long time. And he's saying, hey, I'm not forgetting about you. I know you guys have been here for a long time. And, you know, I want to congratulate for that. And I want to show my appreciation for you being here through all these tough times, especially with past ownership. And I'm going to make sure that things are much, much better in the days ahead.
That reminds me of I saw something on Twitter not long ago. And this person had in their bio, member of the Clipper Nation since Steve Ballmer's era started.
Getting back to what we were saying earlier about the basketball chances of this team, though, you know, just putting this all on, of course, best case, looking at this best case scenario, if the conditioning is right, if Blake really steps up on defense, if Jordan's even better on defense, that they are playing Udo with Hawes and they're making those right calls to actually clog the paint, have rim protection, and have a solid bench that defends as well as they can score. I mean, of course, this is just, you know, dream scenario, right? You know, like the highest aspiration, most optimal scenario, but hey, one can dream.
I don't even think you have to dream that much. This team's as close as you're going to get to a championship right now. It's just luck from here on in.
I mean, hopefully, yeah. I mean, it takes a couple, you know, a couple bounces on the rim to go your way. Some free throws. Maybe we'll see a game where DJ's on the line for the game-winning free throws, and he just banks both of them in or something like that.
Maybe we'll see them use the review system and get it right this time.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Fingers crossed.
Let's not bring that up again. I'm like an angry.
No. I don't want to talk about that anymore.
That's all right. But we've got a new season ahead of us, so we're looking forward to smooth sailing ahead and just a fantastic season. I think that is all for this episode. Definitely, thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolute pleasure, and you're welcome back anytime.
No way. I'll be back then.
Okay. That is it for us here at the Full Sail Podcast. For Craig Freeman, for David Deep, and for Brandon Tomioy, we hope you sail with us again.